Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the Endocrine News Podcast. This year, the Endocrine Society held its 13th annual Type 1 Diabetes Fellows Program. The program provides advanced support to endocrine fellows as they begin their careers as practicing clinicians and diabetes experts. The in-person and online resources include engaging and comprehensive education, as well as career development opportunities for building knowledge, practical skills, and a lasting network of colleagues. The T1D Fellows Program and today's episode are made possible by educational grants from our supporters, Medtronic, Dexcom, Insulet, Abbott, Vertex, Xeris, and Breakthrough T1D. If you'd like to learn more about this year's program, we'll provide a link in today's episode description. Joining me today is Dr. Camille Poe. Dr. Poe is a speaker at this year's T1D Fellows Program, where she addressed using automated insulin delivery in pregnancy. Dr. Poe is co-director of the Diabetes and Pregnancy Program at Massachusetts General Hospital at Mass General Brigham. She is also Associate Professor of Medicine and Associate Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Biology at Harvard Medical School. Thank you for being here today, Dr. Poe.
Thanks so much for inviting me to speak today. I'm really excited to provide some insights and updates on diabetes and pregnancy, which is my favorite topic.
Wonderful. Well, can you walk us through some of the complications associated with diabetes and pregnancy?
Yeah. So the first thing I want to say is prior to the advent of intensive insulin therapy, or really like before we had insulin. So thinking back like before 1921, pregnancy was really, really dangerous for people with diabetes, particularly people with type 1 diabetes, who were the majority of people who had diabetes while they were of childbearing age. And so back then, having diabetes was an absolute contraindication to pregnancy. And even after having insulin available, the risks for both the mothers and the babies of mortality were like 50% or higher. So it was recommended that people with, again, particularly type 1 diabetes, not get pregnant. Fast forward now to today, where we have intensive insulin therapy, we have all these tools at our disposal for people with type 1 diabetes, and really things are just drastically different. We have people every day with type 1 diabetes having healthy pregnancies and healthy babies. And so I think it's just amazing what has happened over the past 100 years in terms of this issue. So when we think about pregnancies today with type 1 diabetes, they are still considered high-risk pregnancies. There are some complications. Probably the most common complication is having a large baby, so fetal overgrowth. And we care about that for a few reasons. One of the reasons is because it can cause problems at delivery. So being more likely to need a cesarean delivery instead of a vaginal delivery, or having shoulder dystocia, which is like an obstetric emergency where the shoulders get stuck in the birth canal after the head has already come out, and that can be dangerous. Also, one of the more common complications is the baby having low blood sugar after birth. And that's because during pregnancy, if a baby has exposure to high blood sugars, then they make their own insulin, and they're able to make plenty of their own insulin. And that only not only causes them to grow big, but then like after they deliver, they can have a little trouble shutting that higher level of insulin off, and then they can drop their blood sugars. Now that's a temporary problem, but it can sometimes lead to separation between mom and baby. It's a treatable problem. There are other complications after birth that babies who are born to mothers with diabetes may have, like there's a greater risk of having respiratory issues or having high bilirubin levels. And then another common complication in people with diabetes is developing high blood pressure or a hypertensive disorder of pregnancy. Preeclampsia is probably the most well-known of those. So those are some of the more common complications that I see in my patients in my practice. Of course, there are rare complications like stillbirth that everybody fears, but the ones I mentioned are the more common ones. And again, it's night and day from before we had intensive insulin therapy.
Now, your presentation at the T1D Fellows Conference mentioned results from clinical trials about closed loop systems and glycemic outcomes in pregnancy. What did we learn from those trials and why are they important?
Yeah, absolutely. So before I touch on the automated insulin delivery trials and the closed loop, I just want to highlight one really important trial in type 1 diabetes and pregnancy, and that was called the CONCEPT trial. And that was published now about 8 to 9 years ago. But what it really demonstrated was how continuous glucose monitoring or CGM improves outcomes in type 1 diabetes and pregnancy. So in that clinical trial, they randomized people to randomly assign them to either use continuous glucose monitoring along with a glucometer or just use a glucometer. And they targeted having blood sugars in the CGM group between 63 milligrams per deciliter and 140 milligrams per deciliter. That was like their target range. And in that trial, the people who used CGM had small improvements in their glucose levels, their hemoglobin A1C, but what was really dramatic was with those even modest improvements in glucose levels, so about 7% more time spent in the pregnancy specific target range, they had dramatically improved neonatal outcomes. So the risk of having a large for gestational age baby or a large baby was cut down dramatically, as was the risk of having a baby with low blood sugar or neonatal hypoglycemia, and the risk of a baby going to the NICU. And in fact, to prevent one of those complications, you only had to treat 6 to 8 people with continuous glucose monitoring. So it ended up also being like very cost effective because if you can save days in the NICU by having a small number of people on continuous glucose monitoring, that's going to also not only help with clinical outcomes and healthy moms and babies, but also with healthcare costs. So it's sort of on that background where we think everyone with type 1 diabetes and pregnancy should be using CGM at this point. And really, we recommend CGM for all our patients with type 1 diabetes, but there's a particular reason to do it in pregnancy. It's on that background that these trials of closed loop systems, which is another word for automated insulin delivery, like come into play. So there's 3 trials of the sort of latest available devices that have been published over the past 4 years or so. So first was the ADAPT trial, and that was published in 2023. So that used the CAM-APS-FX algorithm, which we don't have available in the United States. But that algorithm, which allows you to target a glucose level that is close to like what we would be targeting in pregnancy, more close than a lot of the other systems. And it was developed in close collaboration with thinking about pregnancy in mind. And so with that system and that trial, they were able to show a large benefit in terms of time spent in that pregnancy-specific range, in fact, larger than what was seen in the CONCEPT trial of for CGM. And so that was amazing to see that a closed loop or an automated insulin delivery system could deliver that type of glucose benefit. And then we also have the CRYSTAL trial, which used the Medtronic pump automated insulin delivery system. And that study showed that you could achieve a similar time and range to what was seen in participants in the ADAPT trial the Medtronic device, the latest Medtronic device. And but it didn't actually beat the control group in terms of the overall time and pregnancy specific range. But that said, the people in the trial kind of went into the trial with already like pretty great glycemic management. And certainly the device, the automated insulin delivery device, didn't harm that in any way. And there were benefits in terms of overnight time in range, which is really important to people with diabetes to be able to sleep without fear of glucose problems, and in terms of low blood sugars, which is also really important. So that was the CRYSTAL trial. And then finally, the CIRCUIT trial, which was really exciting, published at the end of last year in 2025, used the Tandem Control IQ algorithm on one of the Tandem pumps. And that study, also similar to the ADAPT study, showed a benefit in terms of pregnancy specific time in range. And that actually led to the recent FDA approval of the CIRCUIT, or the device used in the CIRCUIT trial, which was a Tandem Control IQ algorithm in pregnancy in the United States. So that was the first clearance of an algorithm that we actually have available to us by the FDA for pregnancy with type 1 diabetes in the United States. Now, one interesting thing is that the CAM-APS algorithm, the one that I told you was not available in the US but was studied in the ADAPT trial, is actually FDA approved, but we don't have access to it because there's no pump that is FDA approved that can run that algorithm in the United States. So we don't have access to that in the US for our US listeners, but international listeners may have access to that pump, and it has a proven track record in pregnancy. So that's kind of the landscape for these trials. I think it's great that we have trials in this space. The trials are pretty small in numbers, and the reason that's important is because in order to show a difference in pregnancy outcomes, like some of the complications I told you about, we need like bigger trials to be able to show or demonstrate that automated insulin delivery improves clinical outcomes. So we don't have those data yet, but we do have data for certain devices that it does improve glycemia or certain aspects of glycemia at least.
So, what are the key features of automated insulin delivery devices that makes them the treatment of choice for type 1 diabetes these days?
Yeah, this is a great question. So we probably should have defined automated insulin delivery devices. We've sort of jumped into talking about them. So an automated insulin delivery system, or a closed loop system for management of diabetes, consists of three components that are connected. So a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, which measures glucose levels. A pump, an insulin pump, which delivers the insulin, and an algorithm or a computer housing an algorithm that receives the CGM signal and controls the insulin delivery through the pump. So I think the cool this it's so cool, right? So instead of people with diabetes, particularly people with type 1 diabetes, having to make all of these decisions a day with their insulin. And, in the case of injections, having to give an injection and have it stay in their system, for several hours at least, in some case, much longer than that if it's a 24-hour insulin, and not be sure whether they made the right decision for that, that dose of insulin. To now be able to transition to a system where you're using rapid acting insulin only, and that pump is automatically responding to your current level of glucose, I think can relieve a lot of burden and distress that people with diabetes feel, like managing their disease every day. And so I think that, combined with the fact that computers are really good at like doing calculations, right? Which is essentially what we need to do when we dose insulin. And so automating that process, I think, can be really helpful to people. And the trials have shown that people with type 1 diabetes at least get a benefit from using automated insulin delivery. And there's emerging evidence in other types of diabetes as well that there can be a benefit of automated insulin delivery for people that require insulin. So I think they're really incredible. These systems are really incredible. And at the same time, we need to do more to get them ready to treat all of our patients, including our pregnant patients.
So what considerations need to be taken into account when using these devices in the context of type 1 diabetes and pregnancy?
Yeah, absolutely. So the major issue with using these devices in pregnancy is, with the exception of one of these algorithms, they aren't necessarily designed to get the blood sugars to the targets we want in pregnancy. So all those complications I mentioned can be directly linked to how intensely we control high blood sugars in pregnancy. And so as a result, guidelines like from the Endocrine Society, American Diabetes Association, say that during pregnancy, we need to manage the glucose much more intensely than we do outside of pregnancy. The risk-benefit ratio changes, and we have to maintain essentially lower glucose levels than we do outside of pregnancy. Now, most of these devices were developed for the general population with type 1 diabetes. And of course, the major thing you're balancing when you're thinking about making an automated insulin delivery system is you want to get rid of a lot of high glucose, but you also don't want to cause low blood sugar at the same time. So you're trying to avoid hypoglycemia. And so if you don't have to lower the glucose quite as much, you won't be as at risk for low blood sugars. And so I think the devices are made to keep glucose in a certain range that's not the range that we want for pregnant women. It overlaps with the range, but it's not exactly the range. And so what we end up having to do for a lot of these devices is kind of do some tricks or hacks, or the more proper name for it is assistive techniques, to kind of trick the system into getting into that pregnancy specific range. And some of those assistive techniques or hacks or tricks are less risky, and some of them are more risky, and we do them for the benefits of moms and babies. But I think it's important to sort of know what you're doing when you're using these devices in the context of pregnancy. That said, I think what the trial data suggests is that the devices, if you use them with these tricks, the devices can actually potentially achieve better outcomes. Or if you use them with the tricks, these devices can help manage blood sugar in pregnancy to a better extent than you might be able to do without them.
I definitely want to talk about those tricks, those assistive techniques. But first, how many automated insulin delivery systems are available today, and what are their key differences?
Yeah, great question. So in the US, we have 5 systems. One of the companies has 2 different pump devices that you can use with the same algorithm. So the 5 FDA approved automated insulin delivery systems in the United States are Tandem, and they have 2 different pumps, and they use an algorithm called Control-IQ. There's the Twist pump, which runs Tidepool Loop. There's Medtronic pump, and they have a 780G. The Omnipod pump, their current pump is called the Omnipod 5. And then there's the iLet Bionic Pancreas. And all of the pumps have those 3 components I mentioned, but the algorithms, the systems have different algorithms. And I would say the main way you can kind of distinguish them, or I like to think about them, is some have sort of more automation and fewer settings and less that you can kind of play with or control. And some have like a lot of different knobs to turn and a lot of different settings that you can do. And so I think everyone with diabetes is different, and some people really want to have a low burden system that doesn't require them to put in a lot of different settings or make a lot of different decisions. Like some people just want it to kind of take the burden of diabetes management off them. And then others would find that type of system to be unsettling, and they would want to have more control and more knobs to turn and more ways to fine-tune their insulin delivery. So I find that my patients sort of fall on like a spectrum, and what device they choose may depend on where they lie on that spectrum. And then there's other considerations, like if you're going to wear a device on your body, like how big is it? Does it have tubing? And things like that that people use to make decisions about which system they're going to choose, which CGM they like to use, because they have different compatibility with different CGMs. And those are different considerations people might use for choosing the different devices.
So we talked about those tricks. I want to revisit that. So your presentation at the T1D Fellows Program mentioned these assistive techniques used off-label with each device during pregnancy. Can you tell us more about those techniques?
Yeah, definitely. So, in all the trials I mentioned, in most of the trials I mentioned, they actually didn't necessarily use the systems out of the box. They used different techniques to try to get them closer to pregnancy goals. So, some techniques we use with all systems, which all the systems kind of have different targets and different target ranges, and what that means differs for each system. But in general, for all of these devices, in pregnancy, we tend to say, put them on the lowest target that's available. Even some of the systems are coming out with new targets or lower targets. Omnipod just did that. So we first thing we say is use the lowest target that's available. And then the other techniques really depend on the device. So I'll take the example of the FDA approved system or algorithm Control IQ. So for in the circuit trial, what they did is they use this mode called sleep mode 24/7. So sleep mode is meant for when you're asleep. And normally this algorithm targets a glucose between 112.5 and 160, but in sleep mode, it targets between 112.5 and 120. So it's like a much narrow target range. Now you lose some of the other features like automated insulin delivery, automated insulin correction boluses when you're using sleep mode. But the benefit for us in pregnancy is that's like a lot closer to the range we want to stay in pregnancy. And so in the circuit trial, they use that quite effectively, sleep mode 24/7, in order to try to drive the blood sugar closer to the target range. The other thing they did in that trial is after 20 weeks gestation, which is when the insulin resistance of pregnancy really starts to emerge and kick up, they would program the basal rates for the pump higher than what the person required in the last 2 weeks, so 20% higher. And generally, like outside of pregnancy, we often think of like programming the basal rate to sort of approximate what people need for their basal rates. But this is kind of like a trick that makes the pump a little more aggressive because you're getting more insulin when you're in the target range. And they leverage that in the circuit trial. And as I mentioned, they showed a benefit in time and range. In the Crystal trial, which is the Medtronic trial, in that trial, they also used the lowest target available. And then they would also tell the participants in the trial to, at certain times, use fake carbohydrate boluses. So that means putting carbs into the pump that you're not actually eating. So some people call them fake carbs, some call them ghost carbs. And that was the way they tried to get a little bit more automated insulin delivery with that pump. So it really does depend on the device. And with a lot of these assistive techniques, there's going to be a risk of hypoglycemia. So for the pumps that, or the systems that use the basal rates in their algorithm, in their automated insulin delivery algorithm, because they don't all, but it's the Tandem Control IQ and the Twist Tidepool, which runs the Tidepool loop algorithm, do use information from the program basal rates in the algorithm to deliver the insulin automatically. So for those pumps, what you put in the basal rate matters. And if you make the basal rate high and then you lose connection with your CGM, you are going to be at risk for hypoglycemia if you program the basal rates too high. So that's like the risk of doing that assistive technique that they used in the Soviet trial. And similarly, like if you use fake carbs, like they did in the Crystal trial with the Medtronic 780G, like you could put yourself at risk for low blood sugar, which is why generally using fake carbs is like not necessarily recommended outside of this context. So those are some of the assistive techniques, and they're different for each device depending on what the algorithm uses. That we use in pregnancy, basically off-label with full education of the patients to make sure they understand the risks associated with it. But those are some of the things we have to do to try to achieve these intensive pregnancy glucose targets that we're aiming for in pregnancy.
Now I'm going to shift gears a little bit, but what needs to be considered during the postpartum period in regards to automated insulin delivery devices?
Yeah, this is a great question. So those listeners that take care of pregnant patients will know that pregnancy can be a bit of a roller coaster because during early pregnancy, you're still pretty insulin sensitive. You actually may need even less insulin or be at more risk for hypoglycemia because of nausea, vomiting that you're experiencing, and hormonal changes that make you more sensitive to insulin. But then once you get past 20 weeks or so, you get this hormonal insulin resistance from placental hormones that really raise insulin requirements dramatically. And then what happens postpartum, essentially the moment when you deliver the placenta, all of those hormones go away and you have a dramatic drop in your insulin needs. And you might think, oh, it might go back to where you were before you're pregnant, but that's not actually true. It goes back below that. So you actually probably only need in the immediate postpartum setting about 70% of the insulin that you're requiring before you were even pregnant. So if you think about insulin needs on average doubling over the course of pregnancy from insulin resistance, that means if you do the math, the day after you have the baby, you're only going to need 35% of the insulin that you're using, like maybe the day before you had the baby. So it's like a huge drop in insulin needs. And I think with automated insulin delivery devices, some of the devices, for example, the Medtronic, the Omnipod, and the iLet, they in part base their automated insulin delivery on the preceding days insulin delivery. And the device doesn't know that you just had a baby. There's no way to tell it that. So if you don't do something, or even with the other pumps, like I mentioned, like the Tandem pump or the Twist pump running tight full loop, like, and you keep the same insulin delivery, you're going to be not only like, then you're going to be very hypoglycemic. So that can be very dangerous, especially if you're tired, you're caring for a newborn baby. Like that's just bad news. So for those pumps that really rely on the previous days or weeks insulin delivery, most of the time what I do in my practice is we'll reset those pumps. We'll factory reset them in order to start over and have them not have learned these high doses of insulin that we were needing at the end of pregnancy. And then with the other pumps that more depend on the programmed basal rate, we'll make sure to program a postpartum profile, which we do for all the pumps, but those ones don't need that reset because you can just use the programmed rates that basal rates and lower them a lot appropriately in order to get the pump to deliver less insulin. And for all the pumps, you're going to want to reset your carb ratios and correction factors to be appropriate for the postpartum setting. But it's not a gradual shift in insulin needs. It's like a dramatic shift, like very fast. So it's something you want to talk to your patient about, not on the day they were delivering, ideally, like you would have talked to them about it at like 32 or 30 weeks gestation, which is what we do in our practice.
I have one last question. What do we still need to learn about automated insulin delivery devices in pregnancy?
So, this is a great question. And first, I want to say that I think these devices are amazing and they could be amazing for our pregnant patients. Like, pregnancy is a time when ma diabetes management matters so much because you're impacting not only the mother, but also the baby. And it's a really high stakes time for diabetes management. And these technologies have incredible potential to deliver amazing outcomes for moms and babies. But at this point, as I mentioned, they were not, for the most part, designed for pregnancy. And so we're not using them to their full potential. We're not using these technologies to their full potential at a time when people with diabetes need them the most, I would say. So, the first question we can ask is, with these devices that are available today in the real world, we think that using the automated features is probably better than not using the automated features, even if they're not designed for pregnancy. Like, it's kind of like, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good situation. But we've never actually demonstrated that. And I do see many doctors, colleagues around who aren't necessarily as embedded in the pregnancy space, sometimes having people turn off their automated insulin delivery features because they weren't designed for pregnancy. And we don't have a definitive study to prove whether using the devices in the real world does more than harm, has more benefit than risk for pregnant individuals. So we're actually currently doing a real world study designed to answer that direct exact question. It's called T1D Pregnancy and Me. It's a real world study. It's a direct to participant study. So anyone around the US with type 1 diabetes, no matter how you're giving your insulin, whether you're giving injections or using a pump or you're using automated insulin delivery, can directly enroll. And I think that's going to be really exciting for us to actually be able to answer that fundamental question. And in addition, like I mentioned, a lot of the trials were small, these trials of automated insulin delivery in pregnancy. And so with T1D Pregnancy and Me, we are actually able to enroll a large enough number of participants that we can study some of those clinical outcomes in concert with these automated insulin delivery devices. So I think that's really exciting, and those are some of the things we need to learn. I think the other things we need to do is really push the limits of our technologies and see if we can achieve tighter and tighter glucose levels or more intensely managed glucose levels without causing low blood sugars using these technologies. And so we need to work with our partners in industry to actually design devices designed to get to these pregnancy glucose targets and really see, like, is that possible with our current technologies to get there without causing too many low blood sugars and putting our patients at risk? And then finally, there's like some trade-offs to different ways of managing glucose. And a lot of our targets that we use in pregnancy and are guideline recommended were really not developed in the CGM era. So we don't know which CGM metrics should really be prioritized for pregnancy. Like, is it still important that the fasting glucose is less than 95? That's what the guidelines say. That's what we all aim for. But if you have automated insulin delivery and you can stabilize your glucose across the whole day, does it matter that your fasting's less than 95, or does it matter that you're maximizing time in this pregnancy specific range? And there can be trade-offs in like designs of automated insulin delivery systems related to some of those metrics. So we need to do more research on like what metrics matter in pregnancy for mom's health, baby's health, et cetera.
Wow. This has been absolutely fascinating. I've loved every minute of it. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I wanted to say thank you so much to Dr. Poe. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here with us today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. And I am really grateful to be able to talk about this subject, which I'm so passionate about. And I know together we can get the answers we need to improve things for our pregnant patients with type 1 diabetes and really all types of diabetes. And that's what I'm hoping that we can do together.
That's all for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Is there a topic you'd like to hear me cover in an upcoming episode? I'd love to hear it. Email your suggestions to podcast@endocrine.org. That's podcast@endocrine.org. We'll be back soon with another fascinating dive into the world of endocrinology. Until then, thanks for listening.